Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this December 2nd, 2022. It is 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, a bunch of the actors and the director from Miracle on 34th Street. Right now, joining us on the phone, Representative Scott Crew. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How have you been, man? It's been a while.
It has. I took a nice little break there in November to finish up some business, and now we're back and getting ready for Christmas and state budget coming up right after that. So just keeps rolling and rolling.
You know, interesting you bring that up, Scott. I definitely wanted to talk with you about that, and we'll certainly get to that. Dan, also wanted to wish you good health. Hope things are going well. Really appreciate the time. We missed you last month. It's nice to have you here this month, and especially to be able to get into some of the things that coming out of the political, you know, season and getting into a new year. You mentioned the budget. I want to touch on that. But before we get to all of those things, Scott, I want to know, was there a way, or are you still looking for a way to try to like take, I don't want to say take credit, but to be able to take some kind of positive from the Badgers hiring Luke Fickell. Have you been able to?
It's funny because, you know, I've known Jim Leonard personally for, oh, it has to be close to 15 years now, right? Mm-hmm. So it was super exciting at the time. And then you start seeing some of the things that happen in even the Minnesota game. And then you're kind of like, oh, something's going to happen. Something's up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of see it coming, so I feel bad for Jimmy, but man, that guy's got a future ahead of him, and if it's not the Badgers, he'll be making a heck of a lot more money in the NFL coaching somewhere, so I don't, you know, I feel bad for Jimmy for a little bit, but he'll be just fine, I'm pretty sure. And Fickell is, that's one heck of a hire. That's outside the box thinking there. So,
I mean, really, a big kudos to McIntosh and that whole school, really. But really, it just nobody saw that one coming. And I'm right with you, Jim Leonard. Since his college days to every day he was a pro, one of my favorite safeties of all time. Loved watching him. Loved watching him return punts and everything. Really big fan of his. And anybody who knows anything about football knows that that man knows how to call defense. So he's going to have a job. He'll be okay. Just an interesting hire, interesting situation, and a light way to bring up, to ease into the conversation here.
That's right.
Because we're going to stay in Madison, and I want to touch on some things going on in Madison. You brought up the state budget. Let's go ahead and start right there, Scott. What should Wisconsinites know going into this conversation, know about going into the budget conversation?
Yeah, you know, for me, I always talk about the budget probably close to a year ahead of when it passes. So it usually passes in the end of June in even number years. But by the time it gets to that point, that is a good 6 to 9 months of work. And for where I usually try to start, it's a good year ahead of time, because now is the time where, you know, whether it's municipalities, counties, schools, tech colleges, hospitals, you name it, this is where those individuals need to have communication with people representing them, whether it's locally, statewide, nationally, and make their voices heard on the things they need. So this is where, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, my office always sets up, you know, hundreds of meetings with schools and municipalities and everybody and anyone in between to try to make sure that by New Year's, we've got a good grasp on the things that are needed in my district and maybe a little beyond for the counties I represent as well, to try to have a fighting chance to get some of those things put in front of the committees that need to hear about them, get them onto agendas for different, you know, boards that are trying to make their requests to the governor's office. So all the soup making really starts like right now.
Mm. Are there people that will, you know, you'll be interviewing that we'd be surprised by? That, you know, I think we would think of certain, you know, organizations, certain groups, certain government agencies. But are there any that, you know, oh, you're talking to those people? We wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It gets down into the 1,000-foot level in our communities when we're talking to groups like, you know, for example, ODC is a group that usually we have conversations with throughout the years on budget stuff and see if we can help supplement some of the things that go on there. And this year in particular, with this big debate on abortion policy and which way we're going, are we, you know, are we talking to first choice pregnancy centers? Are we talking family planning options? Are we, which, who are we talking to because of which way the policy might end up? So it it really depends on which way statewide policy is going to go to decide who we further have conversations with. But we expand to all sides of any issue to try to figure out, you know, try to read the tea leaves on where state policy might be to help the individuals are going to have to react to it afterwards.
Do you see some hard cuts in the future? And not, don't have to be specific about where those might be, but if you want to be, certainly can be. But do you think that that might be on the forefront?
Yeah, you know, I don't think I see any widespread cuts coming up here. And I think there's a big pressure on government, especially the state level, with the $6.6 billion surplus to spend more. I think both sides will be, you know, disappointed or surprised, however they want to portray it, that we're not going to be spending that $6.6 billion surplus on all new kinds of programs and ideas. And we're also not going to be cutting spending just to make sure that we can create a bigger surplus. So I think, you know, a lot of places we're at, I think funding levels are pretty appropriate. We're going to have to make some additional adjustments to shared revenue for our cities and towns so they can continue to supply services and do road maintenance. We have to, you know, deal with their education issues and make sure that all facets of education, whether it's K-12, public universities, tech colleges, that they have the funding they need because of inflation to keep doing what they're doing. But no, I don't see any major cuts coming to anybody in the next state budget.
Now that we're, you know, through the election process and everything for this current election, at least, is it time, and especially when we're talking a budget, and you've got so many different organizations and different people that are affected by this, red, blue, undecided, whatever, all in the above. Is this one of those times where there is a lot more, you know, bridge building across the aisle, working together a lot more of that? Or is it still a very decisive time? Because I think talking to just people here in Wood County and different people, Republican, Democrat, all of the above, all the people I talked to, first off, voted. So I think that that's encouraging. But the biggest thing that stood out to people, I didn't hear people talking about inflation or this or that. I heard what is going to get done. We have a Democratic governor and we have a Republican. So how is this going? Are you guys going to be able to get things done? Are we going to be able to look towards our governor, our Congress, all of this working together like Wisconsin is? It's a purple state. Are we going to be able to see more of that? Do you think you're going to be able to see that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, like we've talked about on the show a few times before, when you look at the last three sessions, we're in the 90% bracket on being able to get bills together and get them signed and done. We totally revamped the governor's last state budget and he signed it within days. I mean, so 75% of what we do goes into the budget. And when the legislature recreated that document last year on different priorities, the governor still said, fine, let's just get something done. So both sides have been doing that, and I think it's overplayed in the media. But yes, I did hear the same thing from people is, you know, and the election results showed it, is people really stayed with what they had. They didn't make much of a change in anything to elect Tony Evers and then elect Ron Johnson and then still elect almost a supermajority in the Assembly and then one in the Senate. So it was pretty much a status quo budget. And for me locally, to be at 62% now, it's less of a having to build bridges process, because when you've got 62% of the electorate behind your philosophy already, there's a lot less people to try to bring back on board. So, yeah, we do reach out to people that had issues with us throughout the campaign and try to build that bridge again. But it's easier and easier every session when those numbers keep increasing. So we don't have to spend so much time doing that throughout the course of the budget building process. So now, you know, when we talk about how do those numbers go back into priorities and how do we get the governor to sign those things, that's exactly why we have a committee process. Exactly why the budget goes through a 6-month process to get things vetted, because honestly, there's going to be ideas on my side of the aisle that, you know, we're going to fight against. There's going to be ideas from the other side of the aisle that we might like. And those are the things we take to our committees, to our caucuses, to all of this process that normally doesn't let bad ideas get signed into law. So I think, you know, the partisanship thing gets overplayed a bit because this process is so in-depth that it just kind of filters out bad stuff inherently.
Mm. And Scott, when it comes to why we talk about the people that were voted in and the most recent results of this most recent election, I want to get into the a little bit of that in a second. Before we do, I don't like to waste anybody's time, especially our representatives or anything. So I don't mean to seem like I'm doing that here, but I do want to go into how a bill gets passed. Because the other thing that I came across talking to people, I just randomly asked this whole thing. I had two people out of a lot more than that that could tell me how a bill is passed. And so when they're telling me that, oh, nothing's going to get done because of the Democratic governor and the Republican this and all that, and I'm like, well, you don't even know how something gets done. You know, and it's scary when you look at the statistics of the average American, not just Wisconsinites, the average American that does not know how a bill gets passed. And, you know, there's plenty of websites nowadays like Ballotopia and different things where we can keep up to date on your guys, you know, statistics, if you will, your baseball stats on the back of your card. We can see a lot of that nowadays. And so people look at those things and they say, well, this representative, this congressman or what have you, they're not doing anything or they're not getting a lot done. And well, this is why they're not getting it done. There's a lot of assumptions going on, but there's not a lot of facts going on. And I think that it's important for people. I'm sorry if it's, you know, common knowledge out there to many. It's unfortunately not common enough. So let's go ahead and discuss real quickly how a bill gets passed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how Carl and I started this whole thing 12 years ago, was talking about how this is a tutorial and how to make sure people know how to interact. So it's never a waste of time to do that. So I'm glad you asked, because it is important to know that, you know, you go back to the old Schoolhouse Rock, you know, I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill type of thing. Mm-hmm. And those were important then for a reason, and they're important now for a reason, because things don't just show up on somebody's desk in Madison and somebody just decides yes or no. That is exactly what this process is that I'm talking about. The state budget itself is a bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we take these ideas from any stakeholder that's wanting to give ideas of a certain bill. And to be honest, we don't get a lot of activity on trying to, you know, get people to get excited about giving us ideas or input on things most of the time. So that's where we go out and do our research and our homework and call in stakeholders in different areas and things that affect them differently, whether it's county government, the road construction companies, hospitals, whatever bill might come up. We call them, say, hey, this idea has landed on my desk. Wanted to pick your brain on what this says and how you think it's going to affect you. They give the input back to us. We take it back to our committees where bills go first. When a bill is written, it goes to a committee for a public hearing. We try to bring people down to testify and give their input as well. After that process, the committee has what they call an executive session, where they vote on the bill, whether it's good enough for them to go to the whole floor for everybody to vote on, or whether the bill gets killed right there in committee. I'd probably say 97% of the time, every bill gets through committee, unfortunately, and some committees are afraid to kill bills. That makes it tough for us on the floor to have to try to decide. But even before a bill goes from committee to the floor, it goes through our caucus process. We're all now 64 of us in the Republican Assembly Caucus. We'll sit down and talk about every bill that goes onto our calendar, whether we think it's a good enough idea or not. And the rule that we have in our caucus is, if we can't get 50 people to be on board with the bill that we're trying to present to the floor, and we don't have enough votes for it ourselves, then that bill doesn't advance out of the caucus and doesn't make it to the floor calendar. Hmm. When it does make it to the floor calendar, it gets scheduled for a day on the Assembly floor. Gets brought up and gets introduced, and both sides have a chance to take their votes. And my philosophy and my thoughts on this is that if a representative is not read up well enough on the bill and worked enough on the bill with their constituents to know how it affects them, I would hope that they would either vote no or ask that the bill be sent back to committee, which doesn't happen a whole lot either. So people just tend to cast their vote based on what their personal feelings are sometimes, because either they didn't get a lot of input or they didn't do a lot of homework. So most, I'd say, out of the 2,000-some bills that get drafted in a given session, I'd say 60% of them make it to the floor. Probably 99% of those get passed, because once it gets through that entire process, there's not much left to debate on the floor, because everybody's had a say by the time we vote on it, basically. Then those bills end up going to the Senate, unless they came from the Senate. Because in our system of government, both chambers have to pass it before it goes to the governor's office. Then the governor's office gets 10 days from final passage to decide if they're going to pass it or veto it or what they're going to do with it. And they pass it, he signs it into law, and if he doesn't pass it, the legislature gets a chance with a two-thirds majority to override a veto, which the Senate now has a two-thirds majority for the first time in probably 60-some years, I think it was. The Assembly is two votes short of that. So there will probably be some overrides this session, whereas Governor Evers had 126 vetoes last session. I think that a good amount of those bills will come back, and some of them will probably be overridden and written into law. So that's basically the process. It ends up on the governor's desk, yay or nay, and then we decide if that's the final nay or if it's going to be a yay in the end by all of us together again.
I really appreciate that breakdown, Scott. Thank you for that. And Bart, I wanted to bring it up, have you somebody who really knows what they're talking about discussing that and telling that, but also to get the knowledge out there. Hopefully more people are caught up to date on that now, too. But to lead into the next thing here, because going into the election, we saw the numbers of what was on people's minds. What were they? Why were they voting the way that they did? We saw a lot of inflation, crime, securing the border, expanding domestic energy, keeping taxes low. A lot of these things brought up as the conversation of why people voted either red or blue or independent or what have you. Now that you have those results and you have the people that are in office, how much do you actually think can get done when it comes to these subjects?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, every election in Wisconsin the last 4 years, for some reason or another, at the end of it all comes down to, well, my side lost, so it's gerrymandering, or my side lost and it's a stolen election. So My ultimate goal these next 2 years is to put that crap to rest. I'm just so tired of hearing it from either side when somebody loses, because candidates win or lose elections because of the quality of the candidate that they are. And if you look at any map throughout the central Wisconsin area, I've won every municipality for every election for the last four elections. There's no gerrymandering. It's not possible unless you somehow stretch my district all the way down to Madison somehow and messed around with it that way, that you're going to have a gerrymandering effect here. On the other side of it, stolen elections is an absolutely ridiculous idea, because every single clerk in this district does yeoman's effort to make sure everything's safe and secure. So I want to put those two things to bed first. There's no gerrymander effect, there's no cheating. So now we can move on to the next level, right? And when we talk to people and when we're knocking on doors all summer long, I know what their issues are. This past election came down to two things. It was inflation versus abortion. That's exactly how people voted in this district. That is exactly how people voted in central Wisconsin. And I can say for certainty within this congressional district even. Those two things have to be addressed first. As far as our abortion bill, we've got to figure out a way that we can follow the needs of the 80% of the people who have told us over and over again that we've got to find exceptions to this 1849 law that is now on the books because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. The governor said he's not going to accept an exceptions bill, exceptions in the case of rape, incest, and the health of the mother. I think that's where 80% of people are. I'm sure we're going to see a bill to get that done. It'll end up on his desk. He'll have to decide. Inflation. We've got a $6.6 billion surplus in a time of inflation where people are having problems spending money because they're sending too much darn money to Madison, sending too much darn money to Washington. Those surpluses have to come back, and we have to find a way to offset the cost of inflation with those surpluses to people and ease their pocketbook problems for the time being. So we're going to find a way to offset, whether it's tax rates or sales tax or property tax or something like that, that we can put a chunk of this money towards relieving that burden on people because of inflation. Those two issues are exactly what caused the election to turn out the way it did. Both sides were energized on each one of those issues, and both came to the polls telling the people they elected to go fix those issues. And that's what we have to do immediately when we get back in January.
Scott, I want to go backwards for a second here, just rewind. You mentioned gerrymandering. I do. I think it's only fair to say that I think people should always do their homework on these subjects, not just take you or I, as gospel. Go ahead and do your homework on these things. And if I understand right, you're talking about Wisconsin specifically. You're not talking about like states like Florida and that, are you?
I can't. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
I
okay. Just want to be Florida, sure here, because I think that there's some clear-cut cases in other states.
Yeah, Florida and Illinois. Some of those maps in Illinois are just I go from Springfield all the way up to Chicago sometimes.
There is some crazy stuff going on in our country, but I just wanted to be specific about that. And when it comes, and we've got about 5 minutes left, so there's a lot of things we could dissect there, but I did want to make sure that we had time to talk about something else. So good points made there. Moving on to renewable energy. I know that last month, I want to say it was in the middle of the month sometime last month, you were at UW-Milwaukee talking about this. Can we? How did that go? What did you guys discuss?
Yeah, it was an interesting invite to get down to UW-Milwaukee to talk about the future of renewables and how it would affect, you know, rural communities in particular. That's kind of the focus of the thing that I had spoke on. And obviously here we're in kind of a epicenter of renewable energy increase because of solar farm in Saratoga. We've got one now over in the Wautoma area. We've got a gigantic one over in the Bancroft Plover area, and so renewables are on people's minds right now, and it's all of a land use situation. We've got to involve our local governments in figuring out where these can be placed and how they can be used, but we talked about the absolute need for renewables and how it can actually reinvigorize rural economies, because bringing people to install these, to manage them, to operate them, that brings investment, that brings people to employment situations, that brings things that districts need, and that's interest in the land that they have and the people that live within them. So I think my involvement with that was trying to encourage these major titans of corporations across the state of Wisconsin who were there, that central Wisconsin is a wide open space, that, you know, you look at states that thrive in rural renewable energies, they look a lot like our landscape does, especially down here in Adams County, where it's flat, open, wide open spaces, lots of land that wants to be used, you know, timber companies that aren't going to use it anymore and just sitting there in the holding patterns. So making the pitch to these titans of corporations across the country to say, hey, look at our area for some investment opportunities. I know there's some people that don't like the idea of going to renewable. I think it's just something that's happening because when these corporations have money to invest, they're making the choices. We're not necessarily changing government mandates on them. We do have a 25% renewable mandate in the state of Wisconsin right now. We're far beyond that already because of how corporations are looking at their investment portfolios when it comes to renewables and doing it on their own. Mm-hmm. So why not encourage them to look in areas where it makes sense? And I think that was the nice thing about this.
Yeah.
UW-Milwaukee.
Scott, I don't want to sound like I'm putting words in your mouth or anybody else's or anything, but it does sound like you, this group, you were talking about holding businesses, these companies more accountable. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a nice way to bridge that gap. So we had folks there from Foxconn and some of the bigger international markets that were trying to figure out what role government could have in encouraging them to be able to do more and not getting their way to do more if they wanted. So that was kind of the conversation.
Scott, got any fun things going on this weekend?
Man, it is a holiday crazy weekend right now. So Wautoma had Christmas parade yesterday. We got tree lighting in Bancroft tonight. We got holiday parade in Plainfield tomorrow night. So it is bing, bang, boom. And then the Coosa hometown Christmas parade this weekend. So it is Christmas galore in the district this week. So we're all over to as many events we can get to.
Good to hear, sir, and always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for always having the transparent, fun conversation. Looking forward to talking again next month.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too.
Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year.
Hey, yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you and yours, Scott, too. Yeah, thank you. Again, Representative Scott Crook, Wisconsin State Assembly District 72 Representative. Get that all the title in there for him. Thank you, Scott, for the conversation. Stick around, everybody. We got Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater's Miracle on 34th Street cast director all coming up right here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.